You're locked on to Hans Olsen and Scotty G.
That's right. Yeah.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. We're just a matter of hours away from the NFL draft getting underway. And joining us now, Josh Edwards, NFL draft writer for CBS Sports, kind enough to hang out with us. Josh, this is your Christmas, man. You fired up?
I'm fired up, especially with all these rumors coming in about what could happen with the quarterbacks tonight. Teams moving up and down the board, so I think this will be one of the more entertaining drafts that we've had in recent memory.
Well, give me some of your opening thoughts. I mean, you mentioned the quarterbacks, and I know that there's really four, maybe five, that could go pretty quickly. But give me your thoughts on the order of how these quarterbacks roll out.
Well, I think we have a little bit of clarity on one and two with Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels being those two quarterbacks. Beyond that, I think it's just about anybody's guess. There's some buzz that, you know, maybe some teams – specifically the Patriots are open to moving down and getting J.J. McCarthy a little bit later, allowing a team like the Giants or the Vikings to move up to number three overall and get Drake May. At the end of the day, I think it is going to be Drake May as third quarterback, but there's definitely a lot of conversations about J.J. McCarthy also going there in the top 10. And then Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix would be the next two guys on the board. Do either one of those guys find their way into the first round? And if not, just how long are they going to have to wait on day two?
Well, that's the million-dollar question there, too. In your opinion, do you think there's five quarterbacks taken in the first round?
I think we ultimately will see five quarterbacks taken in the first round, just because I think there will be some desperation from a few teams. I think whoever gets left out of the dance, whether that be the Raiders or the Broncos, could find themselves in a position where they take a player a little bit higher than what they are typically accustomed to doing. Whether that ends up being in the first round, maybe trading back up into the back half of the first round for one of those players, I think is a scenario to monitor if we get past the middle of the first round and nothing has happened at that position. That's a situation to watch as we get closer to the end of Thursday and start preparing for Friday. But Broncos, they don't have as much draft capital, so all the talk about whether they move up the board is centered around Patrick Surtain and whether he's going to be available. Of course, Minnesota has two first-round picks as a result of the Houston trade, so teams are positioning themselves right now to make some moves for these quarterbacks.
Well, I was going to ask you about Denver. Did the Zach Wilson acquisition maybe slow down their ambition to get a quarterback, or is it still they got to find a way to add depth to that room and they'll do everything they can to make it happen in the first round?
He's a nice project moving forward. Sean Payton, you know, he's known to be a quarterback guru. He likes to work with quarterbacks. So I think he's excited about the opportunity to work with Zach Wilson. With that being said, I think it is full steam ahead in search of a quarterback of the future. You know, whether that ends up being Michael Penix Jr., who I think will be the fifth quarterback taken among this group, or a guy like Nix or Spencer Rattler on day two, I think that's the question. But I don't think the acquisition of Zach Wilson is going to affect their overall plans too much.
How many offensive tackles do we see go in the first round?
That's a really good question, and one that I actually am very excited about. I know a lot of people don't get excited about the offensive lineman, but that's where you win games in the NFL. You have to have a strong front, and there's a lot of really quality players in this draft that can help you accomplish that. When it's all said and done, I would be surprised if we didn't see at least six, possibly more than that, because some of these guys have positional flexibility as well. So I think comfortably you're talking about Olufoshanu, you're talking about Joe Alt, Talese Fuaga, you've got J.C. Latham, Graham Barton from Duke. You know, those guys will almost certainly go in the first round. Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. And then you start talking about, will Kingsley Suamataya from BYU get in there? One of my favorite prospects at the position in this draft class. There's guys like Troy Faitanu, who is left tackle trained at Washington, but, you know, may have a more high upside at the guard position moving forward. So there's a lot of really intriguing talents at that position. And even if they did play tackle in college, doesn't necessarily mean that's what they'll be pegged to do in the NFL.
Well, obviously, we cover BYU and take a close look at them. You like Kingsley as a prospect. What jumps out at you, and why do you think he might be a first-round talent?
I'm a little surprised that I'm on an island with this because he's got fantastic size, of course, but you're not talking about a player that is sacrificing speed and athleticism, foot quickness and athleticism, to be that size. I think he has the athleticism to be a really high-end player at the next level. Of course, he checks the box with the size. Family pedigree, Penei Sewell, Noah Sewell, both having gone on to the NFL. He played right tackle for BYU last year. He transferred in from Oregon. He played left tackle this past season. So we haven't really seen stability from him throughout the course of his collegiate career. I think a team that is willing to invest in him and give him the opportunity to grow and develop in a stable role are really going to reap the benefits of that down the road.
So I want to get your thoughts on who is the obvious number one at this point, headed to the Bears, in Caleb Williams. I think that there is a tremendous upside and potentially a lot to gain. Do you feel like there are pit stops? Do you feel like there are red flags, signals that might say he's a number one overall bust down the line?
I think that is certainly a possibility for any player at the position, just based on history. You know, as much as we talk about that position and the certainty in which we do talk about the position, at the end of the day, there is a lot of volatility. A lot of it is based on where you land with the supporting cast, the coaching staff. All of that stuff matters. If you're not in a position to handle a rookie quarterback, you may have a very talented player, but if you can't lead him to achieve confidence as a rookie, it's tough for that player to succeed long term. Where I think Caleb Williams probably has the most concern would be just how comfortable is he working from the pocket. He didn't have the best offensive line at USC, so he was forced to move off his spot a lot and make plays in space, which is what everybody loves. You like a guy like Patrick Mahomes and what he can do at that position. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to make plays from the structure of your offense within the pocket. You have to be able to operate in pressure, step up, you know, move left and right, as opposed to drifting backwards. So I think where you will see the biggest adaptation for him is the speed of the game. You know, once it speeds up, you start seeing these NFL rushers. How is he going to handle that? Is he going to stand in the pocket and try to get through his reads and make his progressions down the field? Or is his first instinct going to be to roll out of the pocket, which we often saw from Justin Fields? So I think there is going to be a learning process for him. But I think we've seen more of his ability to work within the pocket and a structure of an offense than what we've seen from other top picks in the past, like a Zach Wilson or someone of that nature who is a little bit more impromptu in nature.
How do you anticipate Jaden Daniels will make the transition into the NFL?
He is an intriguing prospect. Of course, he's one of the older ones at 24 years old, fantastic mobility at the quarterback position. I think that's going to give him a chance early in his career as he makes this transition to the NFL. You know, whereas we talk about Caleb Williams and needing to make plays from the pocket, I think Jaden Daniels, just with his foot quickness, his ability to make plays in space, gives him a little bit more leeway to make an impact early in his career while he tries to figure out the rest of the game. Speed, working from the pocket, all of that kind of stuff. I want to see him more consistently work the middle of the field. You know, not always go to the sideline, not always tuck it and run when he feels pressure in his face, things of that nature. And I think when you're talking about Washington, which is probably where he's going to land, is the offensive line currently in place good enough for him to achieve success early in his career? Because that is important. He is 24 years old. You want to build that confidence early and just keep the ball rolling downhill. So I think that's going to be very important early in his career. But for me, I want to see his ability to stand in the pocket, deliver in the face of pressure, and really just work all levels of the field.
So here in the state of Utah, we did a re-rank. Just our show did a top 25 re-rank of players, and Sione Vaki came in as the most impactful and important player in the state of Utah to his team and his team's success. How does the NFL value dual threat athletes when it comes to drafting? And what do you think the eval is on Sione Vaki?
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to set it up, because he is a little bit more uncharacteristic from other safeties in this class and, you know, what we had seen 10 years ago. If we were talking about the NFL a decade ago, his role is a little bit more unclear. But in today's game, you know, valuing the ability to make plays in space, make tackles in space, get guys to the ground, I think his ability to drop in coverage but also play in the box gives him a lot of value, because now you can trust him to be on the field in those sub-packages. Similar to Talanoa Hufanga a couple of years ago, coming out of USC, going on to San Francisco, there are better roles for those players in the NFL today because of the versatility that they do bring to the field. So it's kind of tough to peg him as, you know, a safety or a linebacker, because he allows you to fulfill both of those roles in a way. So that's where his value is, what he can do in those sub-packages for defenses moving forward. And, you know, sub-packages are incredibly valuable now. So even though you may not look at it necessarily as a starting position, it's going to be an incredibly valuable asset for a team as they're looking to fill out their roster.
Has Kyle Whittingham built a program in the University of Utah where, let's say you're evaluating a couple of safeties and you got Cole Bishop and another player kind of rated about the same, has the Utes developed a bit of a reputation where their players usually end up winning those tiebreakers just because of the system they run and the players that have come out of that system have had a certain level of success at the NFL?
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's been evident that he does a great job of coaching that entire secondary. The quality of play that you get out of those players early in their career is at a high level. You can trust them to be well coached. Julian Blackman was one of my favorites when he was coming out of Utah. There's another safety in his class. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but what you really valued is just how comfortable you could be putting those players on the field, because you knew that they would take care of business. They would do what they were supposed to do on that particular play. And I think you see that from Cole Bishop and Sione Vaki too. They're both listed as safeties, but they certainly do not play the same role. Cole Bishop, you know, a little bit more of a traditional safety in his ability to play with range, you know, play the deep half of the field, whereas Vaki, again, is a little bit more versatile, as we discussed earlier. But what you can see between both of those players and the players that precede him coming out of Utah is just the stability and how well coached they are at that position.
Rate for me the top three wide receivers on the board, in your opinion, right now.
In my opinion, it is Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State. I think he has the higher floor in this class. Malik Nabers would be second for me because of what he does after the catch. Similar to Justin Jefferson, you know, he's very twitchy after the catch. He's going to get you a lot of yards post-catch. For me, three is Rome Odunze. He's kind of fits both of those. You know, he's a little bit taller of a prospect, but you get that post-catch versatility as well. I mean, Washington was manufacturing touches for him left and right at or near the line of scrimmage. He's not just a ball winner down the field. So I think it varies based on who you talk to in the NFL and what kind of a role you're trying to fill in this draft. I think some teams will prefer Harrison. I think some teams will prefer Nabers, and some teams may just come to the conclusion that Odunze is the best of both worlds. So it would not surprise me if any one of the three were first off the board. I think they're all top 10 prospects. I think they're all going to be high-level NFL players, and it's really just what your flavor is at that position.
So we all think and we all get excited about potential you know, moves and trades. Do you think it's smoke? Do you think there's smoke screens out there, or do you think we're actually going to see some fireworks here in a few hours?
I think it's both. I think we are going to see fireworks, but I also think that there's a lot of smoke out there right now as teams try to create a little bit of misdirection. The Giants don't want teams to know what they're doing. The Vikings don't want teams to know what they're doing. We've heard every scenario possible with both of those organizations. The Giants don't want J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy comes out and said he's talked to the Giants more than any other team. We hear that the Giants aren't going to take a quarterback there. They're going to take Malik Nabers. We've heard Roma Dunze there. With the Vikings, we've heard if Drake May's off the board, they may stay put at number 11 overall and take a Michael Penix Jr. You know, so we've seen every single scenario covered at this point, but I think it's all been done strategically. I think we will see several trades in the first round, not even just as teams jockey for the quarterback position. I think you're going to see movement for those wide receivers, especially if we do see four quarterbacks taken in the top 10. And I think teams are going to really value the offensive tackles in this class, trying to fill a position of need at a premier position. So I think you're going to see a lot of movement even once the quarterback situation kind of becomes to settle and become more clear.
What do you see as the biggest need for the Las Vegas Raiders in this draft?
I think they have a lot. For me personally, if your offensive line is not cast in stone, that is where I always look, because I think you have to have strong offensive line play. You have to have strong defensive line play before you can worry about anything else, because it doesn't matter if you have Devontae Adams. You're not going to be able to get that player the football if your quarterback does not have time to make plays. So for me, my eyes immediately go to the offensive line, getting stronger specifically on the right side. Cornerback is another one that they've tried to fill in recent years. Those attempts have not fared well. I could see them taking a defensive tackle to pair there with Christian Wilkins. There's a lot of directions that they could go. Quarterback, of course, as we discussed earlier. But for me, I think offensive tackle is really where they need to start as they try to rebuild this.
So take quarterback out of it. If you're Sean Payton and the Broncos, let's say that for whatever reason you don't like Penix or you don't like Bo Nix and you're still picking at 12 and you know, you got the Zach Wilson acquisition. What is their next need? Where do you think they go outside and eliminating the quarterback from that conversation?
There's a lot of different directions they could go as well. And I think just looking at Sean Payton's past, he's valued those bigger edge rushers that can win with power. A guy like Jared Verse comes to mind, even though you've got a Nick Bonito and a Jonathan Cooper there developing. Cornerback, I think, is a position where they could look to upgrade opposite of Patrick Surtain. You know, and if Patrick Surtain is traded, then they're going to have to upgrade it even more.
Yeah.
Offensive line would not surprise me. Sean Payton's history, you know, they've consistently invested first and second round picks in that position. So even though we look at it and we say this is the biggest need for this organization, I don't think you can rule it out just because of Sean Payton's past. Defensive tackle, wide receivers, they continue to make moves. Does Cortland Sutton get dealt over the course of the next 3 days? I think this is a team that really has a lot of needs, and that's always what I come back to when I think whether going after your quarterback now is necessarily the right move for where they are in the construction process of that roster.
Where are you at on Brock Bowers? Do you think in a couple of years we'll be talking about him in the same breath as some of the great tight ends in the league?
I think he's an incredibly talented player. I think he has that potential. It just depends on where he lands and whether that organization is going to be able to best use his skill set. If you want to, you know, line him up at the end of your offensive line consistently and expect him to be one of the top five tight ends in the game, I don't necessarily know if that is the best way to use him because he is more of a pass catcher. I mean, he's a guy that has the size, he's got the physicality, he's got the quick twitch to be somebody that you split out a little bit. You know, line up on the boundary, move him around the formation and try to create mismatches. I think that's the best way to use him. If he lands in a situation where a play caller is capable of doing that, then, yeah, I think he has the potential to be one of those top five tight ends in the NFL right now, just looking at his skill set. But fit is definitely going to matter specifically in that regard, because a lot of people don't value the tight end position as much as wide receiver, but that player is capable of making just as much of an impact as a really good wide receiver. I mean, you look at what Kansas City and San Francisco do with Kittle and Kelce. If you have that type of player and you're able to maximize his talent, then you're looking at a player that is going to be very difficult for opposing teams to scheme against.
All right, final question from me. Who makes it back to the postseason first, the Las Vegas Raiders or the Denver Broncos?
Oh, man.
Antonio Pierce? Do we see Sean Payton resurrect what was a proud organization in Denver?
Yeah, good question. It could go either way, but I'm going to say – man, I think the Broncos probably have a little better the Raiders probably have a little better roster right now. But, yeah, I'm going to go with the Raiders. I like their quarterback situation a little bit more. I think they have some real talent on the roster with Christian Wilkins, Max Crosby. If you can add a few more pieces, you know, I don't necessarily know that your path to contention is necessarily clear, especially when looking in that division with the Chargers and the Chiefs, but I think that team at least has more talent right now that could go out and make an impact in the next couple of years. It's just a matter of nailing these next few drafts and, you know, adding the talent necessary around those types of players.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time, Josh. Thanks for hanging out with us. Enjoy the draft tonight and look forward to catching up again here soon.
Great stuff, Josh.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Josh Edwards, CBS Sports, covering the NFL draft right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The Broncos are the worst team in the NFL, and it's not even close.
I actually disagree a little bit with Josh, because I'm not the Antonio Pierce believer that some might be.
Yeah, you're not even a Raiders fan, so of course you would.
I don't know, man.
It pains me to say that.
It doesn't pain you one bit. It makes you happy.
Fan. It hurts me. But I wonder if Sean Payton is the guy, or if he's lost it, or I
very well could.
Was it? It's almost like the Belichick Brady conversation. Was it Drew Brees or was it Sean Payton?
Totally fair conversation to have with Sean Payton. Totally fair.
And Drew Brees was good before he went to the Saints. He just had to have a shoulder surgery.
No, he wasn't.
Drew Brees?
No. Drew Brees wasn't that great.
Sure,
reason.
He didn't win a Super Bowl, but yeah, he wasn't that bad.
No, he won it with Sean Payton. Drew Brees got benched and kicked out of San Diego for Phillip Rivers.
He did. And Sean
got it. In fact, Miami took Dante Culpepper in free agency over Drew Brees. So, yeah, I mean, it's. You look at it and you're like, you know, Drew Brees wasn't much until Sean Payton got his hands on him. So, you know, it's, you know, who, you know, chicken or the egg on that conversation.
Well, I know that he took that high school team to high heights.
Yes, he did.
Because I watched that show and Kevin James should have won.
Would you like
an Oscar?
Let's say, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Disney comes up and they're like, hey, Hans, you know, you're just, you know, the great success story. You saved a man with a wrestling move from dying, like all these great stories. We want to do a biopic of you and create this great movie. And you're like, wow, that's awesome. And they're like, here's a ton of money for your movie rights. Awesome. That's great. And Kevin James is going to play it.
Which actually might be accurate for me. I don't know.
But like you're like, can we talk about this a little bit more? Like, you know,
he's
maybe
a big soft-hearted lover,
like Dwayne Johnson. You know, like maybe, you know, there's other guys.
I gotta admit something. So, ever since my mom built a house in just behind us, you know how Kevin James and Grown Ups, he's always in the house with the mom, eating dinner, and his wife comes in. He flips the TV table up and they're watching soap operas together. And she's like, you told me you were at work. He's like, I was. Are you eating dinner with your mom? Yeah, that's That's me. Kevin James in that scene, that's me. Because I go over to my mom's house. She fixes me a big ham sandwich, fresh cut ham, like a nice honey baked ham with some really great classic cheeses and a new mayo spread that she's excited to try with some soft, fresh baked bread.
You can't shut down the sandwich maker in her, can you?
No.
Because we talk about the Fudge Factory, but she also had a great sandwich
She ran
shop
a deli
out of there. Yeah.
Ran a deli for 25 years. And then she's like, well, honey, you still look hungry. And I'm like, oh, I kind of am. Well, we have some leftover chicken noodle soup. I made the noodles fresh. And it's like, yeah, I better do that. It's low calorie. And then I eat the chicken noodle soup, and then she's like, would you like a velvet mint? And I'm like, yeah, I would. That would
man.
Really this, polish off.
You go right back to 12-year-old hands.
I am 12-year-old hands.
I love it.
It's silly, but I got to imagine that Sean Payton was like, so Kevin James, huh?
Yeah.
That's the direction.
So that's where we're going here.
We're all right. But I guess they worked pretty closely with each other to try to put something together there.
Hans and Scotty, we're live here at RGS Exteriors. Matthew McConaughey would play the story of Tim.
All right, I'll take that.
All right.
You know, as you're saying, Kevin, as you're saying this, I'm just sitting there looking at Hans. I'm just smiling, going, dude, that's a home run. That's like a home run. This isn't even like a maybe. This is like, let's make this happen.
Are you saying I could play Paul Blart? Is that what you're saying?
No.
I could be a mall cop?
No, I'm thinking more in the Here Comes the Boom. There
you go. Oh, okay. The teacher turned fighter.
That's what I'm thinking.
Hey, you got so many good things going on out here, and we talk about this all the time. You know, I've got one of those billboards by my house or by the exit when I get off to go home, and it always shows the interest rates. And it's like, you know, on a good day, it's 6.9. Usually it's in the sevens. And so there's all these people out there that wanted or anticipated moving into their dream home. Well, guess what? 4 years ago, they locked in at 2.8 or 3%. And they can't give up that interest rate. So now's the time to use that home equity that you've built up and keep your interest rate and now turn your current home into your dream home.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking on the show for a year now about this 3% handcuff that everybody has. They don't want to leave that. And everybody thought all the experts, so-called experts, said we were going to have a rate decrease in February. We're going to have another one in the second quarter and another one in the third quarter and another one in the fourth quarter to get back to kind of normal, but it's not happening. And now, you know, talk to all the mortgage guys and everybody's kind of realizing that this is the normal and we're not going to have decreases. I still think by the time the election comes, we'll have one just because the administration is going to want to do something like that direction. Yeah. But even if it does one, it's not going to do a lot, right? So having said all of that, what does all that mean to us as homeowners? What it means is that our rates are not going to, we're not going to get those four, five, three, maybe three evers again, and four or fives are going to be a long ways away. So now the thought is, well, let's just stay where we're at. Let's make the home our forever home. Let's update the kitchen. Let's update the outside, maybe a bathroom, whatever it is. Let's make the home our forever home. Well, where we come in is we can take care of the outside aspect of it. And we have some amazing interest rates that we can offer, better than you can get out on the street, better than you can get through your bank or your credit union, and it's something that we can offer, and it's really easy. It's just like when you go to RC Willen and you want to buy furniture, you fill out a quick credit app. All they're doing is basically pulling your credit score. If your score is a certain amount, then you're qualified automatically for this, and that's exactly the same way with our financing. An interesting stat that we just ran is only 15% of our jobs that we do are financed, but 45% of the overall dollar amount is financed.
Huh.
So what does that mean? What that means is that homeowners are doing the $2,000-$3,000 gutter jobs are just using our credit card and being done. But the homeowners that are really updating their home are financing. They're using our financing. And it's a huge – we've probably quadrupled that this year compared to this time last year.
I love that. I love that you're able to do that for people because those savings compound.
It's a big deal. It's a couple things. One, we can give a better price. But the two things, we just make it easy. The last thing you want to do is go through all this process of getting all these financials to your banker, your loan. And it's none of that. It's a credit score. Boom. That's it. It's that easy. And it's an automatic approval. And in most cases, too, like let's say that the job's 20, they're going to approve you for 25. So if, heaven forbid, something else were to come up when they tear walls down, you've got a couple extra bucks there to spend. And in the grand scheme of things, a couple bucks on a monthly payment doesn't do anything.
But even for you to be able to extend me options in financing, too, you know, whether we're trying to figure out payments, like I've got to be a low payment, or I don't want interest, or I want low interest, or just being able to have those options where I can maybe pay a little bit later, save money, not hit the interest hard. You've got so many ways to work that for people.
Well, and we do, and I guess maybe just the last point to this is when we buy cars, how many times do we pay cash for a car? Very, very few people do. We pay on what we can afford per month. Why is the apps and cars depreciate? They don't make us any money.
Yeah.
Why is our biggest asset we have, and maybe the biggest asset that any of us will ever own, our homes, why would we not treat the home the same as buying a car?
Yeah.
Let's invest in our home and let's do it on a monthly payment.
And gain value.
Even though the interest you're paying, you're still going to appreciate more than the interest you're paying. So that's kind of our pitch. That's kind of our spin. Let's help homeowners out, or gutter sidings, whatever it is on the outside of the home. Let's get it happen.
801-280-3110. It all starts with a phone call, free assessment, free evaluation. They'll take a look at your home, take a look at your options, help out with the financing. So many great options available. 801-280-3110. It's RGS Exteriors right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Salt Lake is the newest home of the National Hockey League.
We want our NHL team. This is a hot spot in America.
And when the announcement was made,
this thing's going to be successful.
The Zone had it covered from every angle.
Two of the big four.
From the draft, free agency, and all the way until the puck hits the ice in the fall.
It can't come soon enough.
Let's go.
Your home for the best coverage of the NHL in Utah.
Utah is now the home of NHL hockey.
Talk about it right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It is your good, it is your bad, your ugly. We are live here at RGS Exteriors, and they bring you the good, the bad, the ugly. Give them a call right now. Tim and the crew ready to help you out. 801-280-3110. That's 801-280-3110.
So, Scotty, I think that this is a interesting thing that's going on in Chicago with the Bears stadium. For those of you that haven't followed what's going on in Chicago, it's not totally unsimilar to what Ryan Smith is doing right now in downtown Salt Lake City. So the Chicago Bears are in a situation where last year they went out and they purchased a big plot of land, over 300 acres in Arlington, and they're in Arlington Heights. And their thought was, okay, we'll own the land. We'll pay for most of the structure. It's no longer a rent to stay, because I believe that their deal is up in like 2030 with their current situation, something like that. Well, they got pushback of don't take this out of Chicago. Don't take this from us.
Yep.
So what they just unveiled, a $5 billion proposal today. It will be an enclosed stadium right next door to Soldier Field, and it is a major project that they're saying would transform the city's lakefront, or transform a large part of their downtown, and they want public funding.
Okay.
In fact, here's their public funding. It calls for $3.2 billion of public funding.
Ooh.
An additional $1.5 billion of public funding for infrastructure. So we're looking at $4.7 billion of public funding to appease, to keep the Chicago Bears happy. And when I was reading through this story, I kept thinking, look, the numbers are smaller. But the situation isn't dissimilar, because the Bears will be like, hey, look, so just so you know, we own 320 acres in Arlington Heights, and we could just go there, and we'll build all the shops we want.
Yep.
In fact, we could build housing, and we could have parking, and we could do anything we want. But if you want us,
you can do this.
We need 4.7 of billing.
And you know what? Honestly, I don't think that's an unfair ask. If you're making, if you're demanding that that team stays where they're at, they're like, okay, we can do that, but we're going to need this. Or we've got the land out here, and we'll take care of it out here. So I can see both sides of that. And people are like, well, you're holding taxpayers hostage. No, we're just giving you the reality of it. Like, we were designed to go out here. We were planning on going out here. You want us instead to be here, so we're going to need your help to be here.
So this, okay, so this is the plan.
Yep.
So they're attaching a lot to hotel tax, and, you know, we're seeing some similar things, what they're trying to do in Chicago that's for the funding.
That's a lot of public money, though.
It's just really big. Yeah. It's really big. Have you seen the dollar amount for downtown here in Salt Lake?
No. And
not either.
I think
it's not going to be in the $4 billion.
No,
it's
going to
be in the $3 billion.
You mean for a new or the renovation?
For what they're planning on doing.
I would say you're looking at anywhere from $900 million to $1.1 billion.
Yeah.
And that's a complete gut job. And remember, they gutted it 5 years ago for what? $125 million. Yeah, that's a drop in the bucket compared to what they're going to have to do now. All right, Hans and Scotty, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Oh, I put him in the bad just because it makes me laugh. And because I know him, I covered him and got to know him and his family for a long time. Stephen Ashworth is having himself some fun on social media right now. The former Aggie, now the Creighton Blue Jay, has just been going on a tirade on social media. Not a tirade, but he's been doing the eyeball emojis because he is as a certain, let's just say Stephen Ashworth knows where he's from. He's a Utah County kid. He's now playing for Creighton, and he has a certain host or a certain player that he is hosting on a recruiting trip, and he is posting eyeball emojis like crazy and pictures of him and this player that he's hosting on the golf course, having dinner, hanging out, having a good time, and that player is Dallin Hall. And Ashworth has posted multiple pictures of him and Dallin Hall hanging out as Creighton is going all in on trying to get Dallin Hall out of the transfer portal.
How's the response?
BYU fans are not pleased, and I don't know how welcome Stephen Ashworth will be when he returns home to Utah County to visit family.
Oh, my only advice is ignore it.
Oh, he knows what he's doing.
That's the thing.
Like, I think that there are certain people out there that really struggle with backlash on social media, and then I think there are certain people out there that go out and seek it. And I think Steven's the latter.
You know, there's this really weird balance with college athletes and college kids in general, because they get the same benefit of the doubt when if you were to walk by like a 5-year-old girl and push her on the ground. It's just a no-win situation. People are like, why were you mean to that 5-year-old girl?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, she was taunting me. Well, yeah, but you never push a 5-year-old girl. It's a 5-year-old girl. And you're like, yeah, well, I asked her 3 times for the dum-dum, and she put it in the ant pile instead. So I pushed her down. You the biggest jerk and dummy. It's the same with college athletes on social media. You go at a college athlete and you're like, oh, Ashworth, how ridiculous. You're a jerk. You never were any good. It's the same thing. People are responding like, oh, real cool. It's a college kid. He's trying to earn his way. Yeah, I hope you feel good attacking a college kid. And you're like, all right, I can't win.
Even though this guy's like 24 years old.
He's 20 and worth $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And you're like, I guess I can't win. The best thing to do is just ignore it. Fine, Dallin Hall, you sucked anyway. Why don't you just leave? Oh, well, why are you attacking Dallin Hall? He's a great kid. He helped in the community. Didn't you see the multiple projects that he picked up in Provo?
Yeah.
He might as well have had 5 Eagle Scout projects. The kid is amazing. Why would you attack Dallin Hall? He's a member of the faith. You know, you're just like, I can't.
Yep.
Do you not know that his mom is the head of the PTA and she's an absolute sweetheart? How dare you attack? And it's like, okay. I'm not going to get
Well, and that's why, you know, even on a bigger conversation, you and I have had this conversation, like in this day and age of NIL where, you know, 19, 20-year-old kids are making four, five, maybe 10 times more than the average working adult, I'm of the belief that they're now held to a higher standard. Like the old adage in the media was, you never really went after individual performances on kids, on college players. Like you say, the team didn't perform well, blah, blah, blah. But it was kind of an unwritten rule. You didn't call out a kid who, you know, dropped a potential game-winning touchdown pass in the fourth quarter because he's a college kid. You know, he's playing for the love of the game. Well, now that kid's making $800,000. Guess what? He can get called out now. In my opinion, he can get called out. Now, but some people still disagree with that. But I'm like, hey, you know what? Coming with that paycheck also comes with another level of accountability, in my opinion. Now, some people still disagree with that, but I don't care. I think once you start taking that kind of money, you're fair game.
Yeah.
But again, to your point, people are like, oh, you can't do that.
If you're tagging college athletes,
yeah,
you're a real low life.
Yeah. All right, Hans and Scotty, Whole World News coming up next right here on The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Kevin Young leaving the Suns to be the BYU basketball coach. 7 years, $30 million.
Freaking BYU, whatever it takes, any means necessary, man. They'll buy a championship. I got to give the Cougars credit. They went all in on their top guy, and they got him. There's never been a coach hired in this state who has been ballyhooed as much as Kevin Young. Ryan Smith knows a ton of people now, and Ainge is a household name. And if they can work for you and go Cougs, as Ainge said, he downplayed it, but you're not fooling us. We know. And I'm fine with it, man. Be involved. That's only a blessing. That's not a curse. To have these guys here with the Jazz to be involved in that program.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 to 10. Presented by Murdoch Hyundai, Utah's number one Hyundai dealer for 16 years in a row on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Number one.
Miss any part of the show? Every moment of every show is available in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your favorite podcasting platform or online at kslsports.com. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Time for another edition of Whole World News right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, Scotty, we are going to go to Fairfield Township, and we're going to be talking about Ann Mayers. She is a 74-year-old woman, Scotty.
Oh, not the singer. Oh, that's John Mayers.
That's John Mayer.
All right.
Ann Mayers is a 74-year-old woman that has been living on her own and doing quite well for the most part in her life. She has zero criminal history.
Okay.
Has never been arrested, hasn't even gotten as little as a speeding ticket in years. She's an upstanding citizen. Well, just recently, she got taken advantage of in a scam. She got a call. It was an individual claiming that they needed money for U.S. Customs, and she paid out.
Oh, no.
And lost everything.
Oh, man.
So she called her sister, and she said, hey, I need help. I need help with my rent. And her sister gave her $5,000. She called her best friend, lifelong friend, and her lifelong friend actually advanced her a $65,000 loan. Now, remember, these are 74-year-old, so that, you know.
Yeah,
She knows you need money to live. You can't get back into a real career.
Yeah.
So she gave her $65,000. Well, Ann Mayers is sitting at home, and she's like, now I owe $70,000. I am completely broke. I am 74. I have nothing. So she decided to rob a bank.
This didn't go the way I thought it would.
So she gets on a mask. She throws on a set of clothing. She
hop on her little like scooter thing that they drive around at Walmart.
Her hover round?
Yeah.
Nope. She got in her car, and she took care of all the meticulous details. She changed out her license plate. She took a bumper sticker off that would have instantly separated her car from other cars. She went into the bank. She pulls a gun.
Oh, she brings the gun.
Fully loaded. Pulls a gun. Puts it at the teller. And says, you know, give me your money.
Yeah.
The teller gives her the money. She gets out. Gets back in the car. She had it all planned. So she had clothes underneath clothes. So she took the clothes off that she was in.
All right.
She had clothes underneath to disguise herself. Her car didn't have the right license plate, and off she drove with $500.
With $500.
$500.
That's all she got out of there with was
$500.
$500. And no.
So she gets home with the $500, and she's sitting there like, $500 isn't going to do nothing. I'm not going to live on the lam the rest of my life. So she went and turned herself in. And she's now being held on a $100,000 bond for having the deadly weapon.
Yeah.
And she's looking to serve 15 years in prison.
Well, at least she'll get 3 squares a day.
Can you believe that story?
No, it's nuts.
She got scammed and she was like, I got to do something. I'm not just going to sit here and owe people money.
Yeah.
I got took, so I'm going to go take.
I'm going to go get mine. I'm gonna go get mine.
Why is there a part of that? First of all, they need to make a movie.
Yeah, part of don't you kind of wish like that of all the people, like I kind of wish you would have gotten like $2 million and gotten away with it.
I didn't like that she pulled the gun.
No, you can't condone that.
I didn't like that. But if she just like formed her hand like, as a pistol and kept it in her pocket, and extended the pocket with just a hand. And it came out that she didn't actually have a gun, but she did have a gun.
Yeah, that's not good.
And by the way, that's what really got
me. That's what's going to get you. If you watch, you know, Raising Arizona, he never actually had a gun. It was a pretend gun. So he always got off.
Which was smart. I love when he got back in the car. He's like, oh, Ed, calm down. I didn't have a gun. It wasn't loaded. They aren't going to hit me with armed robbery.
Hi.
What are you doing, H.I.? As I was reading through the charges, she was charged with tampering with evidence. One thing that you got to be really wise with if you're deciding to rob a bank, anything that you do to plan in advance, you're going to get charged with. So, like, she was charged with taking off the bumper sticker, the license plate, taking off the clothes and trying to disguise herself. All of those are charges. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. You don't need to rob a bank to get RGS to come out to your house. They got great financing options. You can do this all on the up and up.
Man, look at this. You guys are pros, man.
Like that?
These guys are good, aren't they?
Well, the thing is, you understand that you've been around for a long time. You're fifth or fourth, your kids will be fifth.
Yeah, I'm the fourth. My kids will be the fifth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you don't have that kind of longevity of as a business if you're not treating people well.
Yeah, we try. Certainly, are we perfect? Absolutely not. Two things I want to talk about quickly in this segment. One, I want to just kind of peel back the curtains for a minute and be honest. We got an email from an upset customer last night / this morning. Some things that we did wrong and some things that they weren't happy with. Now, first of all, as a business owner, you hate that, right? It's frustrating. But then we talked about it as a team this morning. They've already dealt with it. They called the customer immediately and got the problems resolved and got it dealt with. And I think that's the difference. You never want to hear as an owner where you screwed up. However, I think it's what you do with it. If you fix it, you make it right, and then you take care of the customer, in the long run, it ends up we're better off long term. And I think that the thing is for us is I think if we can do that, if we can take care of our customers and we can get them back on track, that's the difference. I think when you have the taillight warranty and you see the taillights go away and the customer, you're never coming back, that's not what you want. And if anybody,
it burns people so deep.
Well, and I think you're dead on. And I think the second thing is if somebody comes and you get a salesman come up and say, hey, look, we never screw up. We never do that. We'll run.
Yeah.
Cause that ain't the case.
Yeah, it ain't going to happen.
801-280-3110. If you want to get this project started, give them a call, 801-280-3110. It's just a quick call, and you say, hey, look, I've got a gutter issue. Or, hey, look, the siding popped off. Or, hey, my wife and I, we were just sitting down. We want to do a stone skirt around the house, or we want to get rid of the stucco. I was going to tell you, RGS Truck in my neighborhood, truck and trailer, home redoing stucco. They've actually removed stucco, and they're adding on a huge garage addition with an upstairs apartment. And RGS is out there.
Oh, I love it.
They're redoing all the exterior out there. And I want to stop by and be like, hey, good choice.
That's what we want to hear. That's love it.
But what that was wanting to get rid of stucco and wanting to just put a little add-on to the house.
And I'm going to be, that's our niche. Probably the thing that we're better at than anybody in the state of Utah is removing stucco and replacing it with Hardy. And that was just the second thing I want to mention quickly. I know we got to get off, but as soon as I get off the headsets here, I got to go I'm going to go on a team call with the number one guy of James Hardy. He's the big dog, if you want to say. He's number one in Hardy. And we're just having a conversation of how we can make the Hardy segment better here in Salt Lake and what we can do to improve it. Just a quick 15-minute call, but there's probably not anybody in the state of Utah that has him on the speed dial, and I do. I'm very fortunate to have him, and we're going to have a call, and it's an absolute blessing. But what that means to the homeowner is that they know that I got a direct line with the number one guy in the United States of Hardy, and so what that does for them is it makes sure that they're taken care of.
801-280-3110. Go make that phone call. 801-280-3110. It's a great opportunity for you to just completely remake the look of your home. And it's an investment in your home. All you got to do is call 801-280-3110. It's RGS Exteriors right here on The Zone.